KBOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Oh, mercy, mercy.
Thank you to all the restaurants providing food for our volunteers today. Eclectic Kitchen, located at 4936 Northeast Fremont, provided breakfast, serving breakfast and lunch with locally sourced ingredients and with gluten-free options. Pizza A Go-Go, located at 3240 North Williams, provided lunch, serving pizzas, salads, using local ingredients, including gluten-free options, as well as delivery. Ciao Vito, located at 2203 Northeast Alberta, provided dinner, featuring seasonal organic Spanish-Italian fare using local produce and handmade pastas.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced...
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, police in Dallas, Texas arrest a 14-year-old who had constructed a clock.
Native activists from the Columbia River Gorge descend on Oregon's state capitol to oppose the construction of a Nestle bottling plant along the Columbia River.
And in Seattle, where school has not yet started due to an ongoing strike, teachers and administrators have come to an agreement on a contract.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, September 16th, 2015. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member now by calling 877-500-5266. I'm Aaron J. Bernard.
And I'm Brian Pritchett. In breaking news, a powerful earthquake has just hit the capital of Chile. The earthquake caused buildings to sway and people to take refuge in the streets. Several strong aftershocks hit within minutes as tsunami alarms sounded throughout the city. The U.S. Geological Survey reported the quake had a preliminary magnitude of 7.9.
The southeast neighborhood of East Moreland, south of Reed College, is in a standoff against developer Vic Remmers, who is trying to cut down trees for development. Protesters arrived yesterday in the East Moreland neighborhood to protest the removal of three sequoia trees. The trees are approximately 150 years old and are being removed so that a developer can build on the site. Protesters have bypassed the posted no trespassing signs to climb up into the trees to try to prevent their removal. One protester has been in one of the trees for over 24 hours with very little room to move around. The protesters have been embraced by the local community, with someone even bringing breakfast to the tree sitters. It's unclear if the property developer will have them removed, and everything at the protest has remained civil. Robert McCullough from the East Moreland Neighborhood Association recently spoke to KBOO about the need to change city policies regarding the removal of ancient trees.
Well, let's start with the common sense step first. One of the great writers said a rose is a rose is a rose. Certainly a heritage tree is a heritage tree. The idea that we would count some trees as protected and other trees not on pretty much a random basis is ridiculous. I've lived in other cities. This is not the basis of law elsewhere. We need to protect these trees. A critical part of our livability is our urban tree canopy, which are now cutting down at an increasing rate. We do need to protect it. Number two, we all know that compromises have to be made. None of the people there were irrational. We had lawyers, economists, doctors, foresters, college professors. And so there should be a fairly simple way to work through these problems. We should not have to go to court each time. Number three, we actually have had experts, both lawyers and foresters, go through the tree code. In this case, the tree code was not followed. We actually have to start following our own permitting process. If we simply give exceptions to people who have influence, then we defeat the entire idea of permitting. And the situation I'm citing here is not all that arcane. To cut these trees under the tree code, you have to show that there is no alternative. And there are many, many, many alternatives. And as I said, we have had leading architects show Mr. Remmers how he could design very valuable, very attractive homes nestled among these beautiful trees. And I, frankly, would much rather buy a well-designed home with a giant sequoia in the yard than I would have some cookie-cutter McMansions. I will tell you that I and the neighbors will be very happy for anyone to step in from City Hall and give us a hand. They don't have to be on our side. We're not asking for prejudice. We're just asking for common sense.
That was Robert McCullough of the Eastmoreland Neighborhood Association.
Nestle is closing in on a lucrative water privatization deal that will allow the company to access millions of gallons of some of the cleanest drinking water in drought-ravaged Oregon. Under the terms of the deal, Nestle will only pay 1 penny per 40 gallons of water, and then will turn around and sell the same water back to the public for $2.63 per gallon. That is 4,000% profit on the water the company will be allowed to take from the Oregon public. Currently, Nestle is involved in efforts to privatize pristine water sources in California, Pakistan, and in British Columbia. Native activists from Warm Springs and other nearby areas were in Salem today to present a petition to Governor Kate Brown to oppose the Nestle bottling plant. KBOO's Paul Roland was at that rally and joined us with this report from the Capitol steps.
Paul, could you tell us about what's been happening there today at the state capitol?
Well, it's been just an amazing event. There's probably at least 200 people for a rally that was fairly quickly organized. There's a very large Native presence, several river chiefs, important elders from the Columbia River Native community, a couple of tribal council members, and representatives from environmental groups. A really, really powerful event, sending a strong message to Governor Brown on this Nestle water bottling issue. I do have Warm Springs Tribal Councilman Carlos Smith right here ready to speak.
Hi, thank you so much for being with us on KBOO.
Yeah, you bet.
And can you tell us about what brought you out to this action today and what you feel is important for our listeners to know?
You bet. Our tribal council back in May voted unanimously to send a letter to the state and to Cascade Locks opposing the Nestle deal. And so we felt, me and some tribal members felt, that it was important to come out and show our support. Our continued support against the Cascade Locks deal.
And for listeners who might not be familiar, could you talk about what Nestle is proposing in the Columbia Gorge?
Well, there's it's interesting. They've avoided some public comment. And right now, it's my understanding that they're looking at actually, water rights from the state being transferred over to Nestle, which will bottle that water and be sold. So what we're asking the state for is some transparency, and we're asking them to consult the tribes because that's our ancestral land. That's where we're from, Cascade Lock. Our concern with the water swap is they're taking spring water that would be heading to a fish hatchery, and in turn giving it to the city, which in turn is selling it to Nestle. And I understand economic development. Our reservation has a lot of has high unemployment. 70%. It's a much higher than Cascade Locks. But we're concerned. The Columbia River is a polluted river. And, my grandparents, when they were younger, they used to drink out of that river. No one would dare do that nowadays. And we're in a time now where there's, climate change, and we're seeing water temperature soar, and we're seeing salmon die from warm water. And I just don't agree with taking cold water out of that system.
And how will this actually impact people in the Warm Springs reservation and area?
Well, I think that it's important to understand that our people, Wasco people, I'm an elected official, I'm a Wasco Indian. My people come from Cascade Locks. The other question that has to be asked is, why is there a fish hatchery in Cascade Locks? The reason there's a fish hatchery there is because the river's been dammed up and polluted, and the fish runs have been run down. Now, we've made good strides in the past few years to bring back a good number of salmon, but we're a long ways from being where we need to be. But my concern is that fish hatchery is there to mitigate for salmon that's lost. And swapping water, not a guaranteed water source, I don't see how that's going to help further the cause to bring salmon back to the Columbia River. You know, we were moved off the Columbia River into Central Oregon when we signed the treaty in 1855. But we've always maintained that as a usual and custom fishing spot down in Cascade Locks, and some of our people never left when the treaty was signed. So I think there is a lot of options for us in the future.
Well, I do want to thank you so much for joining us from Salem at the state capitol there at the rally to oppose Nestle's proposed bottling plant in Cascade Locks in the Columbia River Gorge. Again, I've been speaking with Warm Springs tribal leader Carlos Smith. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening. So now we are asking you to do the same. Joining us are Gil and Seth to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Hi, thank you very much. You are listening to KBOO Community Radio's fall membership drive. Right now is the time to give us a call, 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm. Click on the tip jar. I'd like to thank everyone that contributed early. We had an early membership drive. We raised over $15,000. How does that affect you? We are now one day less of this, of us talking to you and asking for money. One day less due to the generosity of early donors. Right, Bill?
Absolutely. We are dependent on our listeners, our members, and that when you all step up, of course, everything becomes easier. I wanted to tell you a little about some of the things that our local news does. And remember, these are all volunteers. We have broken exclusive stories about ALEC, the Legislative Exchange Council, which was the author of the Monsanto Protection Act, reports of radiation levels in Oregon with no nukes northwest. And these sorts of things have become more important because media consolidation is at an all-time high. Local news shows like KBOO's are increasingly rare. The Oregonian newspaper recently cut its newsroom staff by more than half, and other local media agencies have cut their local news reports altogether.
Even here in Portland, which is considered a progressive city compared to the rest of the United States anyway, five companies own all the majority of the media: Entercom, CBS, Clear Channel, Salem Communications, and Bustos Media. They own almost all the media, even here in Portland. That's what makes KBOO even more important.
And you can do that by calling 877-500-5266. You keep us important by keeping us going. Or check out kboo.fm. Go to the top right corner where the tip jar is, give it a click, and start giving us money.
That's right, because there is one thing missing from KBOO that's not missing from other radio stations: advertising. Ads. We don't fill your hour with ads, but we do need your support to keep this local newscast coming to your airwaves, the web stream, and into your ears and your head.
And this is the chance to make sure that we don't get pushed off the air by the big capitalists, those big media companies.
Which would love to do that.
Yes, want every portion of the airwaves for themselves.
So give us a call, 877-500-5266.
Or, by the way, you can just come on in to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, jump on the bus, the 12, the 19, the 20.
Your bike?
Yes, your bike. Or, if you must, your car. And head on over here and come on in, walk to the back where we are all sitting and the phone answers are sitting, and start giving us money and becoming a member of the community.
And we'll give you a tour of the studio. You'll get to see where the magic is made.
Yes, yes, indeed. Because somebody here, I'm not sure which person, is constantly going abracadabra, and then everything else happens from there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 877-500-5266.
KBOO.fm. Click on the tip jar. Make it real easy. And we do monthly withdrawals from your bank account, your credit cards, whatever's good for you. $5 a month is $60 a year. Gets you a t-shirt. We take it out. We make it as easy as possible. We actually like the month-to-month contributions.
Count on things.
We can count on it. It makes it easy for you. So $5 a month. That's a basic membership. Get yourself a T-shirt, or you can get yourself this 1-year subscription to Yes Magazine. We do have all kinds of great gifts. Give us a call, 877-500-5266.
And once again, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Come on in and see it live. Mm-hmm. Give us your money live.
Get a slice of cold pizza.
Yes. And I suggest, by the way, what I call the working class donation. Give us your 1 hour's hourly wage every month. So if you're working at minimum wage, which I think is about $9.50 here in Oregon.
Yes, it is.
Give us $9.50 a month. It's something people can actually afford. Or if you happen to be a high-priced lawyer and you're making $400 an hour, we'll take that every month. So give us a call, 877-500-5266.
The Bend campus of Oregon State University cleared another hurdle today when the Oregon Court of Appeals ruled to uphold the university's right to build on a 10-acre site on the city's west side. A group called Truth in Sight has been trying for months to prevent construction on the land. The group brought the case to court. The group has met mostly with defeat. The court ruling follows on a state land use board ruling in favor of the school. Construction has already begun on the campus, which is called OSU Cascades. When the campus opens its doors for the fall semester of 2016, it will become the first 4-year degree institution in the state's 7th largest city.
Portland City Commissioner Dan Saltzman is working to help families that are feeling the pinch of Portland's popularity. A recent influx of new development in combination with more people moving to the area has some residents panicked, as rent averages are increasing and some people are being evicted from their homes so that land can be redeveloped. These challenges hit low-income families the hardest, and with current laws only dictating a 30-day notice, coming up with the money for a sudden rent increase can leave families panicking or even homeless. Saltzman's new plan would require 90 days' notice before evictions or rent hikes over 10%. The new regulations would give residents a better time frame to react to major changes in their budgeting and living situations. The proposal is expected to be presented to the City Council this October.
At today's City Council meeting in Portland, the Council decided to allow a developer to change the makeup of a new building development to have less affordable housing units than he originally proposed. Commissioner Saltzman voiced concern about how the developer changed plans in the middle of the project, thus violating the terms of the original agreement.
One of the concerns that I have here is about precedent. We awarded a public benefit based on an application that promised to meet 100% affordability, and that application was competitively scored. And now the applicant is asking to scale it back from 100% to 40% affordable units. So to what extent are we setting a precedent? That's my first question. I'll come back to some others.
Well, actually, there have been other applications who have set this precedent prior to this, not necessarily in the competitive process. And I need to state my name. So I'm Dori Van Bockel, program coordinator with the Multi program. So, in fact, we have had a couple of other projects also come back and need to be reevaluated. For this particular project, as far as it being part of the competitive cycle, it wouldn't have knocked any other applications out of being qualified or eligible based on what was received at that point. And then we did still review the application, even though the rules have changed for the guidelines of the program have changed since then, as if it still would need to meet those competitive criteria. So it did still exceed the criteria that were there.
Let me just offer an analogy. We in our procurement process, we're always on guard for people that low bid and then come in and through change orders and change circumstances, it becomes more expensive. And let's assume here that the applicant was operating in good faith. But the applicant chose to put an application forward where 100% of the units were affordable. And now the applicant says, because of changed circumstances, they want to back off 60% of that commitment.
Despite Commissioner Saltzman's concerns, the City Council voted to allow the developer to reduce the number of affordable units by 60%. Also at today's City Council meeting in Portland, the Council voted to revise the dates on the intergovernmental agreement with TriMet and 14 participant agencies, apparently to correct an error made last year. Citizen activist Joe Walsh was upset by this move by the council, which he says may have been intentional in order for TriMet to avoid accountability for its actions.
This item should never be on consent agenda. We object automatically to you making it an emergency. We always object to that. This is somebody made a mistake. And if you look at it, if I remember correctly, the contract ran September 28th. And you guys' paperwork ran September 30th. So we sat around and said, why are they making a big deal about this? And then the question came up, well, maybe they've been using this contract illegally because the date screwed up. And now they want to fix it. So they put it on the consent agenda, which goes right underneath the table. No discussion. No nothing. You guys screwed up. Or your staff screwed up. Why don't you just tell the people we made a mistake, we have to correct it?
Thank you, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson. And as regards to the contracted services for whatever it is we want to say that armed uniform officers do while they're around TriMet, I've had the experience of being caught without my honored citizen card and my fare, and it's gone differently. And my main thing is solutionary thinking about some of the issues Mr. Walsh raised. I know people who've had experiences with poor law enforcement from TriMet contracted officers and are then told that even though they're inside the city of Portland on downtown city sidewalks, IPR doesn't apply because it's some out-of-county deputy on a contract with TriMet. So I hope that when your staff does a better job on this upcoming contract, I'll be able to rally some voices so that you'll know that there needs to be some sort of ombudsman or quality control service to make sure that this money is getting quality policing and that there's a due process procedure for people who feel that they've had a really negative encounter, whether it's race-based or whatever. So I hope that in the future on that contract, you'll look towards quality control and citizen engagement. Thank you.
Joe Walsh is not the only one concerned about the TriMet rate hikes, which went into effect on September 1st. The Transit Riders Union has also expressed concern about the 25% rate hike on elderly and disabled passengers.
Mayor Charlie Hales is working on a plan to make people think twice about demolishing a classic Portland home. The city will be taking comments on October 15th about a plan that would generate a $25,000 tax every time a home is demolished to build a new one. In addition to the $25,000 tax, developers would also be required to pay $25 for every year old that the house was. Essentially, this would mean that the older the home, the more expensive the demolition. According to city records, there were 200 single-family homes demolished this last year. The mayor hopes that the tax will help to reduce that number, as well as generate millions in tax revenue. The new tax would not include condemned and dilapidated buildings or buildings in areas that are zoned for multifamily dwellings.
Tech giant Hewlett-Packard announced plans on Tuesday to split the firm into two separate businesses, shedding some 30,000 employees in the process. The newly created Hewlett-Packard Enterprises will focus on software and consulting. HP Incorporated will retain rights to the company's personal computer and printing operations. HP Incorporated currently employs about 1,800 people at a plant in Corvallis. A company representative says that the Corvallis plant is unlikely to be affected by the breakup as it focuses on printing technologies and will remain with HP. 20 years ago, the Corvallis plant employed some 10,000 people. That number has dropped as Hewlett-Packard has pursued austerity measures in the wake of bad acquisitions. HP has already shed some 50,000 jobs over the last few years, even as other tech firms have expanded. In the same time, Google has added 25,000 workers.
State officials announced today that the Oregon minimum wage will not increase this year for the first time in 5 years. The state minimum wage, which currently rests at $9.25, is indexed to a cost of living measure that stayed flat in 2015 due to falling gas prices. The announcement comes amidst pressure from some groups to raise the statewide minimum wage as high as $15 an hour. Supporters of a wage hike say that the current minimum wage is not enough to keep working people out of poverty. Opponents say such a move would force businesses to close or lay off workers. Oregon Labor Commissioner Brad Avakian has come out in favor of raising the minimum wage, saying that Oregon's wage floor is not keeping pace with the rising cost of rent, childcare, and other expenses. Oregon's minimum wage is currently second highest in the nation. Washington is first, with a minimum wage of $9.47, which is also indexed to cost of living measures. Though no state has a minimum wage as high as $15, the city of Seattle recently voted to raise its citywide minimum wage to that level by 2021.
You are listening to a Membership Drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news, and now it is your turn. Joining us are Gil and Seth to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Hi, this is Bill, and I'm with Seth.
Hello.
And let's start with the important numbers in this life. 877-500-5266. That's how you get a hold of us to give us money. And not only do you get local news, independent news, you get national and international news with Democracy Now! Twice a day. You get the most diverse music around, probably anywhere. You get people who are volunteers who come in because they love to do what they're doing.
That's passion.
Yeah, exactly. And they do an excellent job of it. And so we count on our listeners, and there are about 45,000 of you, to contribute to keep us going.
You want to give that important number again?
That important number? You mean 877-500-5266?
That was the one. I want to talk about an important letter. The letter U. U. Give us a call at that important number.
And you know what else you could do, speaking of letters? KBOO.FM. That's the website. You go there, up in the top right corner, you'll see a tip jar. You give it a click, and you can give us money there. We were talking about the monthly donation. Monthly donation is wonderful because it makes it easier for us to track our budget.
And easier for you.
It is. It's true because $60 right all at once can be a problem. $5 a month is generally not a problem. And they were just talking about minimum wage. It's not $9.50. It's $9.25. So, we're asking that you contribute each month 1 hour's wage worth. So if you're on minimum wage, $9.25 an hour, that would be a very good thing. And it's really, really easy to do, and it makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. And where does your money go? You give us a call. 48% of the money that we raise goes to broadcasting. It goes to the staff, the transmitter, repairs. Things do break down, 27% to administrative, that's the other staff, contracted professional services, building maintenance. Yes, we're in a building. We're not outside yet, so we're not in the tents. And then 25% toward our fundraising. We need staff here. We need paper. We need printing, postage. We send you stuff. That's why the monthly deduction is such a great idea, too. It costs less money and less paper and less trees. You give us a call at 877-500-5266. $5 a month, $60 a year. We can automatically deduct it from your credit card or your bank account. Little thought for you, little thought for us. It keeps us going. We don't have to bother you. You don't have to think about it. And it's a great way to keep KBOO in business here.
And we have gifts. We have gifts that we give you when you give to us. For instance, the Ta-Nehisi Coates DVD, $75. That's $6.25 a month. And it's an hour-long interview that Coates had with Amy Goodman on Democracy Now!, and you can get that. And once again, it is so easy. I wanted to throw in a slight aside. There is a website about the living wage, and just for your interest, Portland, Oregon, one adult needs $11.25 an hour to live. So a $9.25 an hour minimum wage is below a living wage. But what's not below a living wage is 877-500-5266, because as a phone number, it's completely irrelevant to a living wage. And so you should call that number and help us with whatever you can.
Or go online, kboo.fm, click on the tip jar. You should have that in your bookmarks. You can listen live to whatever's on at the moment. We have archives of old interviews, music shows, comedy shows. It's a great website, and you can go there right now and help us. In fact, here's another gift we're giving for $60, a minimum pledge. That's $60, $5 a month. You will get a yearly subscription to Yes Magazine. It's a quarterly magazine published by the Positive Futures Network. It invites readers to be part of a global community of change makers. That is KBOO listeners. That's what we are. We're a global community of change makers. Didn't get a phone call from New Zealand, but let's see.
I'm
we can hear from Gresham.
Personally.
Let's hear Gresham or Clackamas give us a call. We are on the internet all over the world. Give us a call or go online to kboo.fm, 877-500-5266.
And I might mention, in terms of monthly gifts, $6.25 a month, $75 membership can get you the 4 gig KBOO USB flash drive. And among the wonderful and interesting things on it is a 1969 interview with Pete Seeger. When he was at his very height, a positively, relatively speaking, young man. And he went on to do more and more important work over the years.
Till the day he died.
Yes, indeed. So you can get that along with Kashama Sawant speaking in Portland and a variety of other really interesting stuff that you might want to have.
Paul Robeson, W.E.B. Dubois.
Yes.
I mean, just Eldridge Cleaver. This thing is just chock full of things you will want to listen to for a $75 membership. That's $6.25 a month.
So we suggest very strongly that you click at kboo.fm and on the tip jar up there in the right corner, and you give us money. Because you're buying into a community that is unequaled in terms of helping ourselves, being aware. This is what it means to be a member. And also, if you happen to have a phone handy and are not driving, try 877-500-5266 and talk to one of our happy phone answerers. So,
community radio, it costs us $93 an hour to keep community radio coming to you. That's a bargain. $93 an hour is a bargain. So give us a call, 877-500-5266, which coincidentally spells KBOO. How about that for a coincidence? Yes.
It is incredibly coincidental.
KBOO.fm, click on the tip jar, and definitely bookmark it. You'll want to come back to that website and listen to what we're doing, even without your radio.
877-500-5266.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Occupy Portland Radio at 6. Tonight's show will feature audio from last night's Renters Emergency Rally in Portland. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is steady rain in the morning with showers later and a high of 66, moving to partly cloudy and 52 at night with a slight chance of showers. Today in history, on September 16, 1810, Miguel Hidalgo, the parish priest in Dolores, Guanajuato, delivers the Grito de Dolores to his congregation, instigating the Mexican War of Independence. The quote of the day is from Neil Gaiman. It has always been the prerogative of children and halfwits to point out that the emperor has no clothes. But the halfwit remains a halfwit, and the emperor remains an emperor.
Now having a little cooking session for Blue Note. Right here from Cafe Bohemia.
It is 5:33, time now for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
In the 1960s, I attended the University of North Texas, a public school blessed with good teachers and an educational culture focused on enabling us students to become socially useful citizens. And it was affordable. With close to free tuition and a part-time job, I could get a good education, gain experience in everything from work to civic activism, graduate in 4 years, and obtain a debt-free start in life. We just assumed that that's what college was supposed to be. It still ought to be, but for most students today, it's not even close. Indeed, a $1.3 trillion mountain of debt is weighing down students at all types of U.S. colleges, endangering our entire economy. That's more than people owe on credit cards or auto loans, and it'll soon surpass the subprime mortgage debt that crashed the economy in 2008. Private, for-profit, corporate colleges are the biggest creators of this looming danger. To say there are lots of horror stories about them is like saying there are lots of ouchies in a bramble patch. With brand names like University of Phoenix, ITT Tech, Corinthian, Kaplan, and Strayer, they suck up some $32 billion a year in federal student loan money. They overcharge students so drastically that even those who graduate are stuck with nearly $40,000 in debt. And they deliver such poor education that graduates can't get jobs with high enough wages to repay the loans. David Halpern, author of Stealing America's Future, calls this predatory educational industry an immoral enterprise. This is Jim Hightower saying America's whole approach to ever higher priced higher education is wrongheaded. We know that college and advanced skill degrees today are as essential to both individual and national well-being as high school diplomas used to be. So it's time to redirect and reinvest in America's future by making higher education free.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Police in a Dallas, Texas suburb descended on a local high school yesterday to arrest a 14-year-old who had constructed a clock. Ahmed Muhammad is a 14-year-old freshman at MacArthur High School in Irving. He built a clock at home and brought it in to show his engineering teacher. But his English teacher heard it beeping and called the police. Ahmed, who is a Muslim American and the son of an exiled Sudanese politician, was pulled out of class and put in a room with five police officers. He was questioned for some time and then led out of school in handcuffs. A wave of outrage broke over the city as politicians and citizens alike heaped criticism on police and the school. President Obama reached out over Twitter, inviting Ahmed to visit the White House with his clock. Police announced this afternoon that Ahmed had been exonerated and no charges would be brought. For more, KBOO's Jenkins Soderberg spoke with Satinder Singh of the Texas branch of the American Civil Liberties Union.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about Ahmed Muhammad, who has been arrested for creating a clock as a science project.
Yesterday, Ahmed apparently had made a clock using his engineering skills, and he brought it to school and rightfully wanted to show it to his engineering teacher. And that led to a whole chain of terrible, unfortunate events. Apparently, one of the teachers saw the clock and saw a brown kid with a name indicating that he was Muslim and immediately flagged the principal and concerned that it was a device, a terroristic device, and that led to police officers coming in and questioning Ahmed over the purpose of the clock. And apparently the alleged threat of expulsion from the principal if he didn't immediately waive his constitutional rights and sign a written statement admitting that the device was intended for illicit purposes. Fortunately, sanity has prevailed, and he has been released back into his parents' custody. And at this time, the prosecutors are not threatening any charges.
And is this type of thing common? Is it something you've seen before where students get targeted or get mischaracterized because they're Muslim?
So what we have seen is a general Islamophobia, if you will, and racial profiling, particularly in this town, which is just outside of Dallas. Earlier this year, the mayor of the town supported the city council voted to end the use of Sharia law in courts and to forbid the use of foreign law, and specifically targeting an imam there. That's the source of strength in the very small but vibrant Muslim community there. And I think what you see is that anti-Islamic fear, the fear-mongering that starts at the top, trickles down all the way to the point where you have a child being dragged out in handcuffs for making a clock.
Now, Ahmed Mohammed's father is a pretty well-known and well-connected person. That obviously didn't stop the arrest from taking place, but do you think that's contributed to the fact that we actually know about this case? Are there others that maybe that we aren't hearing about on the news?
I think at any time the President of the United States sings your praises on social media and invites you to the White House to show off your invention is obviously a sign that this is a story that was able to see the light of day, and Sandy was able to prevail because of that. But unfortunately, lots of particularly immigrant folks don't have that sort of exposure, don't have those sort of channels, and they get washed away because they don't have the influence or the connections to be able to draw light on travesties like this.
Well, what do you think it says about the educational system if a science teacher can't recognize a basic electronic device and instead targets and profiles the student?
Well, I think that's sad. As our nation is growing into a more competitive environment with other countries, and the importance of engineering and science have really taken precedence on that. The fact that one of the largest school districts in the country and around the Dallas area, the basic science teacher can't identify a clock, and not just the science teacher, but apparently the police officers were unable to identify a clock, despite the fact that this 14-year-old child was able to, is sad. And unfortunately, I would just like to say as a resident Texan that doesn't reflect on all of us here. We know what clocks look like. Unfortunately, these police officers in the school will from now on also.
Well, I do want to thank you for joining us. Again, I've been speaking with Satinder Singh. He is a senior staff attorney at the ACLU in Texas. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
Now's your chance to show support for the work our volunteers put in to bring you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year. Joining us again are Bill and Seth to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Or Seth and Bill. Bill and Seth, that's alphabetical.
Well, or left or right, it's Seth and Bill.
We're not a member of KBOO already. Come join us. We are community radio. That means we're your radio station. If you live in Portland, if you listen to us online, you are part of our community. And we need your support right now to help keep us going. The government does not help us out. We don't have advertising. This is our advertising. Four times a year, we have a drive, and we ask you to help us out to keep your radio station going because you enjoy it. That's 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm. Click on the tip jar.
Or walk into 20 Southeast 8th Avenue and say hello, particularly with a big bag of money. That would be nice. We would be your friends.
And donuts.
Actually, we're your friends anyway. We're easy. 877-500-5266. Community radio means that everybody can be involved. You can come into any meeting, like the board of directors. You can, you can participate. You can speak. Or if you want to, and I certainly don't know why you would, you could run for the board of directors. You could be on the board. And they do important stuff.
I'd have to limp for the board of directors. Yes. I don't run anymore.
Nor do I, but
They train. You can come here and take classes. They train you how to do what me and Bill are doing. I mean, speaking on the radio. It was hard training. It was like boot camp.
It was brutal.
And
our volunteer coordinator, Ani, she's vicious when riled.
We have people answering the phones. We have people cleaning up. This is a community. It's a co-op.
Yeah. Or actually, the news people that you're listening to have all been trained. And numbers of former news people at KBOO have gone on to actual professional work at news places that actually pay.
Yes.
Because we do good work, and the people who come here do good work. This is important stuff. This is not trivial. Just because it's volunteer, just because these people are not getting paid, doesn't mean they don't know what they're doing.
And it's fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
It really is fun.
And we work on getting people here and training them to do excellent work. And you can help us do that by calling 877-500-5266 or heading on over to kboo.fm if you're feeling antisocial and don't want to talk to anybody, but want to give us money because we love you for that.
And if you're feeling extra social, come on down, 20 East Burnside.
Southeast 8th,
right off Burnside. You'll find it. You'll see us. You'll see a bunch of cool people sitting outside. And
not to mention, we have this absolutely wonderful facade on the building that's been painted like the top of our webpage. It's really lovely.
Exactly. Come on down. Meet us. You can donate. You can walk out of here with a KBOO shirt or one of the other gifts. You can walk right out. You sign up. You can see all the classes available.
We won't hold you prisoner here either.
You can come and go as you please. The door opens and closes. So come on down or give us a call. 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm. Thank you.
One woman is dead and nearly 600 homes destroyed after a wildfire ravaged the tiny community of Middleton, California, earlier this week. More than 20,000 people remain displaced, many in a refugee camp in nearby Calistoga. The fire tested the limits of the government's emergency response system and in some instances breached them. One resident says she called 911 to ask for advice after seeing helicopters dropping fire retardant near her home and was told to leave. Another says she didn't leave until a friend who works as an EMT sent her a Facebook message telling her to get out. Cal Fire uses a service called Nexile, which allows government agencies to contact residents via text message and email. Middletown residents say they didn't receive alert messages until 3 hours after they had to evacuate of their own accord. Middletown is a census-designated place with a population of about 1,300, located about 100 miles north of Oakland. The fire that destroyed it continues to burn and is about 30% contained.